Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk some Bulls with Malika Andrews. And before she joined us about the Zach LaVine contract decision, the Bulls matching the Kings offer sheet, the pros, the cons of that, and all the in-betweens. And I've reached a point of just kind of, okay, I guess it's okay. Okay, kind of. I didn't really like it, but I don't have a say in it, and he's here, and I'm going to have to deal with it, and maybe the Bulls are right, and he's a lot better than I think he is.
Maybe.
And plenty of Cubs talk, too. The fact that they've been living a strange kind of baseball life, having to keep coming back. There's unlikely heroes. There's some bad pitching, and they also have a couple of All-Stars who were voted in a way that puts a little different face on the Cubs, a little more swagger, a little more color, and I think it's really cool that instead of just being the team of Brizzo, that there's a couple new faces that are among the fan favorites.
Did you notice that at a military tribute at Greenbrier on Sunday, Phil Mickelson made his begrudging mea culpa to the golf snoots? You see this? He trying to fix his lie in the weeds. He's like four back or three over par or something like that. He's kicking around in some of the high grass and trying to, you know, do this, that, the other. The ball moves. He improves his lie and calls himself for the two-shot penalty. This, of course, after the U.S. Open, where he sprinted as best as Phil Mickelson can sprint to a moving ball on the green to hit it back toward the cup so that he could avoid being there any longer because he was done with it.
Well, it should have done that. He should have been removed.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you absolutely could have removed him from that tournament after hitting a moving ball on the green. This, though, he has made his, I don't know, he's performed his comeuppance. He's given his penance to the world.
I think each is its own.
Oh, no, it's over now. No, it's over. Yeah, he's better now. It's fine. You can like Phil Mickelson again, even though.
So he fluffs his lie and he takes the two-stroke penalty.
Even though his quotes afterward are saying that I could have just picked it up and move it one side or the other. He was allowed, I think, a club in this instance, but instead he kicked it around and moved the ball, and that's illegal. I don't know. The rules of golf are strange and unflinchingly rigid. Phil Mickelson has broken one and admitted that he broke one and therefore repaired the hearts of those who had them rended by the U.S. Open.
Mark Reynolds is on, I think this is his eighth team in a 12-season MLB career. And a man in many ways ahead of his time. While people were making fun of his strikeouts, this was a three true outcome player. One of the early three true outcome players, along with Russell Branyan and Jack Cust.
Adam Dunn, Adam when you
Dunn
think about it, too.
Were the guys in that conversation. But Mark
Jack
Reynolds
Cust.
had quite a weekend. He hit a pinch hit walk-off home run Friday night. And then in his next plate appearance, hit a home run on Saturday, ended up going 5 for 5 with 10 RBI. And then Sunday, 2 for 4, a double, a walk, and a run. And in a lopsided loss, he ended up pitching. So they brought him in to pitch. He's a knuckleballer. Apparently,
awesome.
He's a nasty knuckleballer. And he threw three pitches. It was a strike. And it was one strike, and then there was a grounder for an out. So he did his job, and he got him out of an inning. And anytime he comes up, I always look at what a fascinating set of comps he has.
Mark Reynolds,
who only has a career WAR of 9.6 at Baseball Reference.
For what, 8 seasons, 10 seasons?
12 years.
12 years now.
He has led the league in strikeouts 4 times. From 2008 to 2011, he led baseball in strikeouts. And his career slash line is .239, .330, .458. He has 291 career homers.
Huh.
It's a lot.
There's a couple of really good seasons for Mark Reynolds in there. You know, it's like actual well-rounded seasons. There's 3 or 4. Well, 2 or 3 maybe.
He had 44 home runs in 2009. He had 37 home runs in 2011, but that's not why you called. Check out these comps for Mark Reynolds.
Bring them to me.
Okay? And just this is just completely all over the map. We'll go 10 to 1. Tony Armas, Jay Buhner.
Yes.
Nick Swisher.
Yes.
Jesse Barfield.
This is going to get weird. Right?
Jesse Barfield. Number 6 is Roger Maris.
What?
Bob Allison, Dean Palmer, Carlos Pena, Gorman Thomas, and number 1 is Jay Bruce.
Whoa.
Yeah. You've got Tony Armas, Jay Buhner, Nick Swisher, and Roger Maris in that small grouping.
The Carlos Pena one feels right to me. You know what I mean? Like, that's the one. What was that, third?
That's third,
That feels right to me.
Yeah, it's just, and Tony Armas still, I don't know if you would never have gotten the chance to watch
him
play.
No, I'd have to go back.
I did watch Tony Armas Jr.
pitch, I think.
Tony Armas, the original, at Old Comiskey, put one in the actual center field seats.
Kidding me.
Not just over the wall.
Right.
But up in the old...
The seats.
In the seats
right.
over there. There was the big green wall there up on top of there. And people looked at each other like, did he just... Yeah, he did.
I was watching
big, strong man.
The highlights of Mark Reynolds last night. I clicked the video because MLB, it sends you the pop-up ad or the push notification or whatever. I'm like, okay, I'll click. I didn't read what was going on. So I just clicked it for his 10 RBI game. And I felt like Brody and Mallrats. Like, that kid is back on the escalator. There's... more runners on for every at-bat he's got. He's just coming up there with three guys on again. It was unreal, a 10 RBI game from Mark Reynolds. And 5 hits for that man to have. Mm-hmm. Count the number of 5-hit games he's ever had. Have you noticed, when's the last time you checked in on the AL West?
The AL West, checked in how?
Just the divisional race, where everybody's bunched up or not bunched up. Because I had written it off. As soon as the Houston Astros showed up, I was like, okay, we're done. I'll check in on the AL West races again because I don't think this whole Mike Trout thing is going to work if everybody's going to get hurt around him and Shohei Ohtani's not going to show up.
Showed up last night.
Yeah, definitely did. But it's a little bit more fun than you might think, especially with the Oakland A's. You know the A's are 50 and 40? They're 10 games over 500. Furthermore, did you know the A's over their last 24 games are 16 and 8? And yes, they've been doing some bum slaying with the Padres and Tigers and Royals all coming around, but they've also beat the Indians and the Angels. The reason I bring up the A's, though, is mostly because Edwin Jackson is pitching for the A's.
Mm-hmm.
It's like his 90th team, remember? He has made 3 starts so far, and so far they've all been pretty darn good. He's got a 2.45 ERA, a 1.91 batting average against. He's putting up some strikeouts, 16 of them in 18 and a third innings. The walks are fine at 4. Edwin Jackson has had himself a decent week and a half, while the A's have had a real good 3 or 4 weeks. And no, I don't think there's any realistic scenario by which the A's get themselves into the wild card. I think they're 6.5 back in that AL wild card thing and 10 back of the Astros.
I thought you were going to bring this up. Has Edwin Jackson become a trade commodity?
Flip Edwin Jackson.
Has this become a deadline trade? Again,
the A's are going to move him.
Is he good enough to have value to someone else?
Get to that 14th team.
Right.
So the A's are right there, and Edwin Jackson is in the thick of it. It's been strange.
Connor McKnight reporting the Oakland Athletics exist.
They are. They're there. Look at that in their green and yellow.
I found this at Vox.com. It was originally reported by the Washington Post. U.S. dairy producers now have a 1.39 billion pound surplus of cheese.
Oh, I got it. Send it over. I got you. I'll take care of that
surplus. It is the largest domestic reserve of cheddar, Swiss, American, and other cheese varieties on record. There is enough excess cheese to arm each American citizen.
To arm them?
With a hefty 4.6 pounds of cheese.
I accept.
You might ask yourself, why the massive cheese stockpile? And members of massive cheese stockpile. There's a larger story here. U.S. dairy producers have been overproducing milk. When there is a milk surplus, it gets turned into cheese, which can be stored for longer periods before spoiling.
Makes sense.
In the case of American cheese, indefinitely. I have been slowly working through, and not Kraft singles, not the processed cheese food, but actual technical American cheese, the good slices. I swear to God, this thing's been in my fridge perfectly fine for 6 months.
Really?
Yep.
That's a...
Opened and put in a Ziploc and still fine. It's a little scary, but it's delicious as ever. So the Post notes that milk and cheese surpluses tend to peak during the summer months when dairy demand is down. Additionally, cows, which are more efficient milk producers than ever before, thanks to selective breeding, tend to generate the most milk in the springtime.
That's a really kind way of putting what we've done to cows.
Right. The artificial cows.
Yeah, yes, they've become more efficient at producing milk at the expense of, you know, being cows.
Yeah, what was the thing that Luke Skywalker was doing? Was he milking an exile?
Yes,
what
he was milking for the blue milk.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know. I just watched that movie yesterday. I forgot what the name of that thing is.
Did it have a name?
Yeah, it does. Come on, really?
Of course.
Lucas had to sell it as a toy. It definitely has a name.
So the American dairy market is overproducing, but you ask this question. What would more than a billion pounds of cheese look like? So what Vox did was they extrapolated from the density of the most popular brand of cheddar. 1.39 billion pounds of cheese, again, 4.6 pounds for every American citizen, would roughly take up 900,303 cubic yards. And I know that's impossible for you to get your head around.
It's very difficult.
It is roughly equivalent to the size of the U.S. Capitol building.
You know, Andrew Jackson had in the White House a giant wheel of cheese. And one day a year, everyone would get to come in and take from the giant wheel of cheese who needed food. True story.
Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, and in that vein, it's really one of the only kind things he ever did.
I was going to say one of the few good things.
The size of the Capitol?
Well, maybe thinking of Andrew Johnson. Yeah, the size of the Capitol building. That's how much extra cheese there is. So enjoy. Happy summer.
Listen, send it over to the podcast. We got guys who could polish that thing off in a day or two.
Challenge accepted.
Are you kidding? The different uses for cheese.
And you're a Wisconsinite, too. Oh, and I will be there at the end of the week.
It is not a McKnight gathering unless a giant brick of cheese and Tostitos chips has been set out so as to eat however you like. It's a gross, gross habit, but we're all into it. By the way, it's a thalassiren that Luke milks.
A thalassiren.
A thalassiren on Okto. Both hyphenated. You didn't watch last night some of the greatest summertime television I have ever seen.
Okay. I did. I watched.
You watched?
No, I watched Travis Pastrana trying to equal Evel Knievel.
I put that on the DVR. Did he make it? Don't tell me. Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
Because growing up, I was a huge Evel Knievel fan. I was Evel Knievel for Halloween.
Really?
Oh.
In a body cast? Just
no,
kind of being wheeled
stop
around?
It. No, I almost.
I mean, stop it.
I almost
broke out. He's so proud of it.
I almost cried with the Snake River Canyon thing. I sat there in front of the television, woke up early, and like got ready.
Is that the one when he was in the rocket?
Yeah, the rocket car. And it failed, and then somebody else, one of the designers of the rocket car actually redid it successfully relatively recently.
I
was almost in tears.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea. I apologize for nothing, because was clearly staring fate dead in the eyes and saying,
just think
go
if he
on.
Did that in Pixar form, you'd be a wreck.
Yeah, and a bit. But an Evel Knievel, a genuinely bad guy, too.
Really? I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
So you,
so you
watched
this.
I watched that.
And I didn't get the push notification that Pastrana died, so I feel like he probably made it. But we'll see. I'll go look at it on the DVR. No, Dan. I watched Very Cavallari.
Oy.
It was awful. Also, it was fantastic, but it was terrible. Also, it was just wonderful. And if I haven't gotten you...
It's like me and the Zach Levine deal.
You're really back and forth on this thing. If I haven't gotten you to watch Arrested Development, or if you're just gonna, if you're gonna peace out on Always Sunny in Philadelphia, fine. I implore you, sir, to watch Very Cavallari, because the J Nuggets are just some of the most... He is so dismissive of everything in his life.
But isn't he doing a bit now? It's self-aware.
Probably,
You probably, don't think that's actually him with all the natural reaction that
really,
he's had like that?
Honestly, the rest of the show, take it or leave it. Some of the women that are surrounding, whether it's her friends or her coworkers, and they're surrounding them, I haven't really latched on to some of the side characters. And it's an uphill battle to get to appreciating any of these things, I guess. But I'm there for all of the Jay moments. I'm there
so
for
I know
all of them.
We've,
we have
like, joked around about what you're going to do. You know, and I don't care, obviously, that you take some time. I mean, I get it. You worked your ass off. But I don't think that you would be happy doing what you're doing for the rest of your life. So have you thought about when you do get bored, what you're going to do?
Yeah, no.
Okay, well, maybe you should.
I'm not really looking to do a lot of work right now. I'm looking to do the exact opposite of that.
That's fine.
This all worked out in 2 years.
Hey, why'd you take a 2-year break?
Well, I was a hairdresser, so I feel like I got my workout in with a blow dryer and stuff, you know?
You can't be serious.
What?
The faces.
I am serious. Don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me blow dryer. Yeah. They're apparently parking on his lawn, so he's bringing out the women who are working for Kristen. They're all working out of the house, and they're parking on his lawn, so he brings out parking cones to tell them to not park in his lawn. It's all pretty aggrieved and fairly, you know, reality television. But honest to God, I don't know what it is. The faces he makes and the complete dismissiveness he has for everyone else in his life is, it's like a magnet. It's drawing me closer and closer. It is really quite something to watch.
You, sir, are in charge of that.
How are we doing? Do we have any questions on anything?
Well, you're not.
What can I get for you?
All right, this is all you.
Okay.
You are in charge.
I'm going to bring you around to this.
You're in charge of this show.
I'm going to bring you around.
You're entirely in charge.
You are literally the only person that just from Jump Street won't even give it a chance.
Did you see Twitter last night?
The show is nothing without Cutler.
It was popping. It was all over the place. It was all very Cavallari. All of it. And it is. It's all about Jay. I'm just waiting to see the next.
Dan can't have fun with reality TV.
Here's what I'm
Dan
really hoping for.
Dan can't have fun with it. No. Nope.
You know how all these terrible reality shows work? At some point, the side character gets their own episode just for like, you know, just so that the network can test like the spinoff idea or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm praying that Jay gets the spinoff episode. Like he didn't go into the contract negotiations going, I will be there 9 minutes tops. That's all I'm giving you in my
life. Oh my God.
That's all I'm doing. I'm praying. For the spinoff episode.
That was the Midday Midway. Brought to you by Lakeside Bank. For the second year in a row, the top-rated bank in Chicago is Lakeside Bank. S&P Global Intel says Lakeside's number one, again, among all 2017 banks between $1 and $10 billion in assets. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. When we come back, we're going to give away one of our two pairs of passes to meet Joe Madden following our July 24th live broadcast from our downtown Blue Cross of Blue Shield Performance Stage. That will be the day after our Cubs on Deck luncheon, the second installment of that series. Wilson Contreras, all-star catcher, and pitcher Mike Montgomery. That's at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern, presented by Xfinity and AZEK Building Product. Haven't bought tickets yet? Do that. 670thescore.com/ondeck for information and to purchase tickets. So we're going to give away a chance to meet Joe in just a moment. Also, want to find out what you think about everything we just said. 312-644-6767 is our telephone number. Another note to get to here. I mentioned that I watched the England and Sweden game on Saturday.
Missed all of that game.
There's an NBA connection to England's team that I did not know about.
Really?
That I found fascinating. Yeah,
so I watched the next one. I watched Russia and Croatia and watched Croatia just nearly give that thing away late.
You missed the NBA connection.
Okay.
There's something there. So we'll get to that. We'll do a giveaway next. Keep it here. You got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
He's pretty jacked up. He sounds it. You could tell. So I was learning a lot about England's national soccer team, coached by the rakishly handsome Gareth Southgate and his well-tailored waistcoats.
Gareth Southgate?
Gareth Southgate. Can you have more of a British football coach name than Gareth Southgate?
He is rakishly handsome.
Isn't
Look
he?
At that.
Yeah.
Suit coats and vests and the whole thing.
Oh, he's got the all the style down. And apparently, and he was a very unlikely coach to this team. It was not the first choice. He almost accidented his way into the job and took sort of an outside-the-box approach to trying to fix what has ailed English national soccer. And one of the things he did was watch NBA basketball. And the game that he went to, oddly enough, was a game between the Pelicans and the Timberwolves.
When?
Last year at some point, maybe a couple years ago. And
I didn't know how long the guy's been doing it.
Apparently, he had nothing but questions the entire time. And with any access to coaches, had his...
Why aren't they using their feet? I don't understand.
Had notebooks out. And a disproportionate amount of England's goals have come on what are called set pieces. And what that means is a set play. It means off of
corner kicks,
off of a corner kick, or off of direct kick, indirect kick, anything that's being done where walls are being built and angles have to be found. It's not just the free flowing open play in which a lot of their goals have come.
It's not the beautiful game.
It is. Well, he made it that way, but he used NBA principles. He used the principles of spacing and angles and screening to inform the way he sets guys up with individual matchups off of some of these set pieces.
So he's talking to the Timberwolves and to the Pelicans about how to get this thing done.
Yep, back screens, flare screens, sometimes less is more, moving people out of an area so your guy with an advantage has room to operate. Huh. These were principles that weren't necessarily used in the same way. I mean, some guys have said, well, now he's just taking credit for things we've always done, or he's... But how directly he studied NBA principles, he knows if he's got a height advantage for a guy who might be able to head a ball, you get the clutter out of there. Make sure there's open space in which he can work. Harry Maguire's goal that he scored was an individual advantage where he was able to get his head above his man's head and pop the ball right in. So it has been fascinating to me when they said, look, he saw this. He knew he had to find some market inefficiencies here to try to get his guys in better position, and he looked to a completely different sport for some of those answers.
You see a lot that, you know, coaches will grab from. Joe Maddon does this a lot. He'll have coaches come in, and a lot of guys do, coaches from other sports.
Well, good question for him tomorrow, then.
And they'll I'm sure we'll talk to them about it. They'll just have other coaches come in. He had Ditka come in early on, and that was kind of, oh, really? What are you going to talk to him about? But other coaches have come through, and, you know, whether it's your guy at Loyola or they've all kind of come through and had that conversation on the top step of the dugout. And I guess I've always thought more often that the conversation is about how do you reach players? You know, how do you have conversation with guys? How do you get people to buy in all together? But if he's taking actual concepts and applying them and plugging them into the game, that's even cooler.
773 says, that explains why Gareth Southgate has been yelling ICE all World Cup long.
But has he been yelling all World Cup long?
No, he's very aware of how he looks on camera, though. He's got a
couple of these guys. You notice the Russian coach? This guy, I mean, you could not have looked more out of central casting than that guy, just like pouncing up and down the sideline and just screaming and yelling at people and just having a very... You know, it's a mustache, but it's not really a mustache. It's like maybe he kind of forgot to shave it the night before, and then that just kind of grows. It's very, very angry. It's a very angry Russian coach.
Maybe he just looks angry. Some people just look that way.
No, he was behaving fairly angry, too.
Sort of resting scowl.
Imploring his guys.
But does he have the KGB walk, though?
Felt like it.
Well, you can see it. They talk about it. So you know the way Putin walks?
Yeah, lead with a shoulder kind of thing?
Yeah, it's almost like you're on a bit of an angle, and apparently it has to do with how they train KGB agents to have their gun at the ready in a certain way.
Also because when you're dueling with pistols, that's a harder target if you're turned sideways like that.
Yeah, there's apparently a KGB walk. I don't know if that guy has it or not.
It certainly seemed angry enough to have been probably part of that institution at some point.
Is it kind of like John Lester, where you just can't imagine him actually smiling?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that guy's never smiled.
Yeah, I got completely creeped out because in my Twitter feed, there's a picture of a smiling John Lester getting ready for some country music charity fundraiser.
He is not in a uniform, I guarantee you, right?
No, he's got a cowboy hat on.
Of course.
Yeah, it's just weird though, because you see Lester and it's almost like scary, like clown scary at that point, because his face isn't supposed to be smiling.
It's like this intense, freaky. Actually, you know, there are a couple of Google John Lester smile. He's actually smiling in uniform. Oh no, see, this is when he got that gigantic contract with the Cubs, so that makes sense. He's sitting down, jersey on, very rich and smiling, so that makes more sense.
I have just smiled briefly. You can't, you know,
just a moment of smile.
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Music City Bowl champs host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. I mentioned we had something to give away. Let's do it right now. Caller number 6 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of passes to meet Joe Madden following our July 24th live broadcast from a downtown Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. We will have another pair of passes to give away before we are done at 1 o'clock today.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. You just get to come in and hang out and talk to him about other coaches you've stolen stuff from.
I don't know if he's stolen stuff from guys. But
because Gareth apparently has been accused of
appropriating
things.
Everybody
lifts. Are you kidding me?
But if you do it across
everybody lifts stuff.
If you do it across a sport.
Well, then you're just going to get told that you're not doing it the right way. The old guard is going to come out and yell at you and say, we've been doing this from the 46 team was doing this.
Yeah, I wonder how many examples of that there really are where things can translate from one sport to another sport. And it's not just psychobabble. It isn't just like, the way.
Oh, actual X's and O's?
Yeah, actual X's and O's.
It makes sense that spacing would be one of them, right? It makes all the sense in the world that spacing would be one of those things.
And again, I got to get back to planet Earth because I saw an incredible.
That's for sure.
An incredible sports moment. I was totally just geeking out on some of this stuff. I saw this was apparently stolen somehow from an NHL practice, and it got to the Galapagos Islands.
What?
I'm not kidding. Maybe somebody else saw this because it looked exactly like something I've seen coached in a hockey practice.
That's the next place that they're expanding, the NHL. Forget the Seattle.
Islands?
They're heading to the Galapagos Islands.
Your Galapagos tortoises. It would have to be the tortoises, right?
Komodo dragons?
Or was it the finches of differently shaped beaks?
Hard to fit on a jersey.
What? I'm right, though. Is that where Darwin found?
Yeah,
They were the very same bird, but they had evolved with different shaped beaks depending on what their food
sources were that they were going to eat.
Right. Like some had to get into smaller areas. Some had to break seeds open. So they were the exact same bird with the differently shaped beaks.
Komodo dragons, Madagascar, by the way. I had the wrong set of isolated islands.
You're not
That's my
close.
Mistake. No, my mistake. My
Come
mistake.
On,
Poisonous
man.
Dragons.
All right. So we'll get to that. We got more to give away. And then we got Cubs Talk with Mark Gonzalez coming up just after noon on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment is brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates on an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. We were looking for other examples of cross-pollination, seeing that much of England's football success in the World Cup is due to their success in set-piece situations, running a play off of a corner kick, off of some kind of free kick that involved basketball principles that Gareth Southgate learned.
You're announcing him at court.
Directly from NBA counterparts saying screening, zone defense, or man defense. What are we seeing, and how do we attack it? And trying to figure out individual matchups and learning how to vacate space to create opportunities and bring guys out and back as needed. So this is apropos of nothing, but I was just top of mind. There's this sea lion, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And apparently the bull sea lions are they have to really compete.
Those are the big ones, right?
Yeah, but the young ones, they got to pack on a lot of calories because you don't get a lot of attention unless you're enormous.
Big is beautiful.
Right. So they have to eat a lot, and they show one sea lion that goes out and gets this great idea that it's gonna try to round up ahi tuna. Big school of tuna. These are big fish, 70 to 100-pound fish. And he's going to just sort of herd them into an inlet and then try to eat it as he does successfully. He gets 3 or 4 of these fish and he works them back into shallower water into this dead end.
So he's got him rounded
got
up.
Him dead to rights. Okay. And I'm thinking, oh, here it is. Bang. He's got his fish dinner. Boom. And no, all three of them zip right around because they're just way faster.
The tuna.
No, they're way faster.
The huge sea lion. You can't turn.
You can't turn tuna are built for speed. Then it shows him somehow recruiting two other sea lions and somehow communicating what they're going
to
do.
You know, some people would say it's not the sea lion's job to recruit. That really that belongs to the front office. That it's not, you can't put that on a single C line to go ahead and call everybody around to recruit for your super team.
I'm not making this up. Somehow the C line and his two buddies now go out to the same spot. They do the very same thing. It's like he's told them, like, I tried it. I need help. I couldn't do this myself. I don't know how this is communicated. I don't know if this is just instinctive behavior. It's something done before. But they go out, and it works. And they get a bunch of these tuna.
Not one. Not two. Not three.
It's done by the first sea lion wearing a LeBron Cavaliers jersey and waddling up to the other two.
And it happens again. And they've got this incredible drone footage, or however they get it, for the BBC stuff. It's just unbelievable.
I don't understand how they get the cameras. I don't know where they get it. It's magic.
And I know it's true because as soon as David Attenborough's talking, it has to be true.
Obviously.
So, and there they go again. The same inlet, and they get them right back in there. And then the hockey starts. They position themselves in these perfect hockey triangles where when two would go in to chase like the fish,
sure,
the third would instinctively drop back. It's just like they teach if a defenseman is jumping into the play or a defenseman is making a foray up ice, the centerman's got to come back. Or depending on the angle of your little coverage triangle there, you always have to understand who's rotating to that middle defensive position. And they did it. Where two would chase, one would drop back to then forestall any escape from the fish that way. And it worked.
And they got their tuna.
And they got him. But it was just this, it was incredible. It was like watching the cycling of the puck. It was watching these animals, perfect spacing, perfect timing, perfect awareness and understanding, always having someone drop back there. So if basketball can work for international soccer, then clearly these sea lions have been studying hockey.
It's where Joel Quenneville spends his off seasons, just staring into the inlets and watching the sea lions cycle.
It's just what it looked like to me. They'd naturally drop back to make sure they had coverage. It was incredible.
Too many problems. It doesn't make any sense. They had so many problems with the extra sea lion advantage.
You gotta be careful when you enter the play, otherwise you're gonna get whistled.
They've been going with the overload. I'm an umbrella guy myself.
You gotta have size up front, though. I mean, you gotta have people who can get parked right there in front of the tuna. Otherwise, you know, the overload is gonna work better if you got a little bit more speed and you hit that backside pass right there. Where is this link? It was on Planet Earth. I was geeking out on Planet Earth a little bit over the weekend.
It's an easy show to geek out on. You just let it roll. Let it roll all the way through. And you know how some shows you'll watch 7 or 8 episodes of, or however many you've got the time for, and you skip the opening credits. You know, Netflix will give you that little button where you can skip the intro. Nobody ever does that with the Planet Earth thing.
It's too cool.
Because the music is awesome and the open is cool and the Attenborough's talking about God knows what and whatever. I mean, nobody skips that. Everybody watches that all the way through.
Yeah, the 309 says Quenneville won't use the young sea lions, though.
Veteran sea lions. Doesn't matter if he's sitting there on the bench ready to roll, just called up from Rockford.
How do they tell each other what to do? How do they instruct? Like, hey. I tried the sacred tuna. It didn't work. I need your help. We're all going to get tuna.
I got an idea for another thing about the tuna.
We're all going to eat. Who's hungry?
Really? Blackhawks should learn from the sea lions.
You're right. It was just, it amazed me. I don't know. They didn't really explain it.
You explain sea lion communication?
It's Planet Earth. You know everything.
As omniscient as Attenborough is, it's not like he can get dropped into that situation. And you got sea lions. Here, give me the inside dope. Let me know what's going on.
I like picturing Attenborough as doing no prep at all. Like, he just knows.
Just waking up and waltzing into the studio.
Yeah, nobody gives him any actual printed material or even prepares him for anything. It's just, what do we got?
What do we have here today? Sea lions?
Okay, let's see. Amazon.
What are they going after? Tuna?
All right, is it electric eel? Okay, let's go. This is the electric eel. And he just rattles off completely off the top of his head.
Not actually how he talks. It's just something that he's affected to go into work
no,
and
he's
do
not
it
even,
that
he's
way.
He's not British.
No, not even a little bit.
How you guys doing?
All right, what's today?
It's like Vitale.
It's the Vitale thing?
Hey, how are you? Hey, how's it going? Hey, you want to finish this? I ordered too much pizza. What do you have the rest of this pizza. It's fine.
Dick, you're on. Red light's on.
Oh, awesome, baby. Flat out awesome.
Thank you.
But then, oh, yeah. Are we going to get dessert or what?
Hey, man, that's the business.
The Planet Earth is prime binge watching is what it is. It's absolutely prime. I wanted to bring you back, if I can, for a moment.
Try, please.
I'm going to try for a moment. And maybe this is something for later on, because then we got Gonzo coming up at noon. We're going to talk a little Cubs with him. But I have to bring you back to something that we kind of, I think, not dismissed, but let fall away from some of the Zach LaVine conversation.
All right.
Because regardless of how you may feel about signing the contract, you, Dan Bernstein, or you, anybody listening, or Bulls fan X, Y, or Z.
I told you how I feel. I feel
About it, right?
I think aggressively, powerfully.
But I think you got to remember, regardless of how you let yourself feel about this signing, I don't think that should allow you to accept that once it gets to on the court stuff. I don't think it should allow you to change expectations for I don't think, regardless of if you feel this kind of middling distance about the contract itself, that's fine. How you got there, that's fine too. Fact of the matter is, a decision was made to keep Zach LaVine at this price. A decision was made to keep Zach LaVine at this price and write off the idea of having two max slots, because I think that's what you have to look at, logistically speaking, come next summer. You're writing off two. Maybe you get the one. Probably not the two. They've made an endorsement of this player, and I would be worried if at any point your feeling of ambivalence, I guess, toward the Bulls making a decision to keep one of their young tentpole type players bleeds into the expectations you should have for this team. Because if they've said, this is our guy, if they said, this is our core, if they've acknowledged that we're going to build from here, then you have to hold expectations up, well, despite feeling a little
No, that one is separate from the other.
It needs to be.
The objective assessment of where they are and when they're going to get there, notwithstanding, I would need to ask the question, and I don't know if this was asked directly, do you think Zach LaVine could be the best player on your championship team? I don't think they think that. I think that they
At 19-5.
It's not what the number says.
They don't seem to think that.
It sounds like, I guess, one thing that did amaze me throughout this process was how many people still don't understand how insanely, ridiculously wealthy the NBA is and what constitutes an expensive contract.
Mm-hmm.
That people still think that they hear $20 million. It really isn't that much money in the NBA.
Casey Johnson's done a really good job of pointing out that what might be worth looking at more than... And it's tough. It's tough for me to do it this way because I keep on looking at the ability to sign two max contract players at the end of this season, at the end of the coming season. But he's pointing it out as percentage of cap, right? That it's this 16, 17, 18% number. I can't remember exactly where it falls given projected caps. But not only is that part of it worth looking at, that it is that percentage of your cap, but he's pointed out a number of times that salary cap is expected to go up. It is expected to balloon. It is expected, based on revenues and television contracts and eyes on the product, to be a little wealthier for teams. And it doesn't seem like that's necessarily going to be fast enough for the Bulls and that expansion of said salary cap to include two max contracts in any kind of Zach LaVine existing Bulls, but that does matter in terms of the long term. Because if it is 19-5 each and every year of those 4 years, it's difficult to say with a 23-year-old player who should have a lot to grow into, but it feels that that's a more reachable ceiling than any kind of, you know, escalating money or a baseball type contract where it only gets richer and richer and richer as it goes on.
I guess the point is, if they build the team correctly and they do put it on a championship trajectory, the last thing we're going to be worried about is what Zach LaVine is making.
That's the bet they've made.
Just at that point,
that's the bet they've
made.
It's
not going to matter as much, and he will be a foundational or functional player on a team with players that are way better than he is. Right?
That has to be their play. Yes, right. Absolutely.
Okay. Mark Gonzalez is going to tell us what is going on with the Cubs. It's been a weird time for them. They're winning, and it's all fun, and everybody's singing the song, but it's taken a lot out of them. And the break seems to be coming at a good time for them, but they've got a West Coast swing first. So we'll find out all things Cubs from him next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.